I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is February 16th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Aye. Chair Hansen is present. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, present.
Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, present.
Acom, Patty.
Present.
Acom, present. Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, present.
Acklin, present. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, present.
Backer, present. Backer, Finn, Jamie.
Present.
Acklin, Rob.
Present.
President Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, present.
Fisher, present. Green, Steve.
Green, present.
Igo, Spencer.
Igo, present.
Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, present.
Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, present.
Lee, Fu.
Lee, present.
Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, present.
Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, present.
Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, present.
Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, present.
Tice, Tama.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Quorum is present. I want to take a moment and just recognize and send our condolences to Molly Peterson on the passing of her father last night. Molly will be out for some time in the next few days, and so we want to send our condolences to her. The next item on the agenda is the minutes for Thursday, February 11th, 2021. Representative Morrison, have you looked at those minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrison moves the minutes for February 11th, 2021. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, minutes are approved. Next up, members, we have House File 168. By Representative Lee, cumulative pollution analysis requirement before air quality permit issue modified. Representative Lee, would you like to move that House File 168 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee, I believe you have an author's amendment. Could you briefly explain your author's amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So the author's amendment defines what our environmental justice area is. It also indicate, talks about the requirement for a cumulative impact analysis, talks about demographic analysis. And Mr. Chair, if we adopt this, I could provide a more in-depth overview when I provide the bill overview.
Representative Lee moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. Is there any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Lee, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 168 as amended. Mr. Chair, the burden of air pollution is not evenly shared. According to the American Lung Association, poorer people in some racial and ethnic groups are among those who often face higher exposure to pollutants and who may experience greater responses to such pollution. The most recent EPA review of the research on the health effects of particle pollution released in 2019 concluded that non-white populations face higher risk from particle pollution. A 2016 study published in the Environmental Research Letters analyzed over 16,000 facilities in the U.S. and concluded that there is a direct correlation between these risks and the disproportionate siting of polluting facilities in environmental justice EJ communities. In my district, Northern Meadows is one example of a pollution source that unjustly and disproportionately impacted an EJ community in Minneapolis. Alarmed by the amount of hazardous pollution generated over several years by the facility's metal shredder, residents engaged in a years-long battle to get Northern Meadows out of our community. Finally, after a lengthy court battle with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Northern Metals agreed to shut its facility in North Minneapolis and move to Becker by 2019. But the company's pollution didn't end until September of 2019, when Northern Metals admitted to altering pollution records and was ordered by the MPCA to permanently shut down immediately. In a settlement with the MPCA, the company said it did not accurately record readings from equipment that measure air emissions and change measurements to have the emissions appear safe. The false records not only violated its permit, but also abrogated a past court settlement in Minnesota's record-keeping laws. Northern Metals paid a penalty of $200,000 on top of $2.5 million in fines for past violations. The air impacts of polluting facilities like Northern Metals on North Minneapolis are disturbing, and we have heard, you know, last week from the report from the legislative auditor on water gremlin. And according to the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, the 55411 zip code, which I represent, where the plant is located, has the highest rate of asthma hospitalization in Minnesota, 5 times the average. The MPCA has been monitoring and documenting total suspension particulates, TSP, in North Minneapolis since 2013. Air monitoring results in 2017 identified the following problems. Violations of the daily and annual total suspended particulate, TSP, standards, exceedance of the daily PM10 standard. These have been shown that exposure to high concentrations of PMT can result in a number of health impacts ranging from coughing and wheezing to asthma attacks and bronchitis to high blood pressure, heart attack, strokes, and premature death. Other results were elevated lead concentration measured at 80% of the national lead standard and elevated heavy metal concentration including 4 metals, arsenic, chromium, cobalt, and nickel. And so, Mr. Chair, House File 168, as amended, takes some significant steps towards protecting EJ communities from the pollution generated by facilities like Northern Metals and shifts the costs and responsibility onto permit applicants rather than Minnesota taxpayer. House File 168, as amended, provides a statutory definition of EJ community using census data, where 40% or more of the population is non-white, 35% or more of the household have an income at or below 200% of the federal poverty level, or 40% or more of the population over the age of 5 have limited English proficiency or within Indian country as defined in United States Code Title 18, Section 1151. The bill also said that the MPCA is required to set geographical boundaries to environmental justice areas and can amend the boundaries following an appeal by the residents. House File 168 expands the cumulative analysis requirement to include permit renewals, amendments to permits in addition to new permits. It also expands to include facilities located outside the geographic boundaries of an EJ community if the facility could potentially increase the air pollution levels within the EJ community. It requires a permit application to specifically state if the action is likely to increase pollution levels in the EJ communities and require the applicant to show the data it used to make the determination. The PCA must notify residents within the EJ boundaries of all steps of the permitting process, including through direct mail and in a language other than English where there is English limited proficiency. Permit applicants must also report data from the neighborhood where the facility is and would be located, including but not limited to racial and ethnic characteristics, income and poverty levels, the age distribution, birth rate, education levels, the incidence of in a hospital as admission rates for respiratory disease, pulmonary disease, cancer, diabetes, asthma, high levels of blood lead concentration, compromised immune system, and other conditions that may be exacerbated by exposure to pollution. Also include the incidence of substandard housing condition, the proportion of the population without access to health insurance and medical care, information on the proportion of the population receiving public assistance and medical assistance, the incidence of poor nutrition, biomonitoring data indicating body burns of environmental pollutants, and also the presence of subpopulations that may be particularly sensitive to exposure to additional pollutants, including workers exposed to toxic chemicals in the workplace and substances, fishers and hunter, which we have seen with some of the employees over at Water Gremlin, and also information on microclimate or topographical factors of the area that affect exposure levels, And lastly, other environmental stressors, including but not limited to noise, that impact the area population, and how the factors examined under this paragraph may interact to increase the likelihood of portions of the population sustaining an adverse effect from exposure to the incremental pollution. Mr. Chair, the bill also say that if the MPCA determines that issuing a permit would contribute to increased levels of health or environmental impacts, the agency must either deny the permit or put restriction on the facility that eliminate any contribution to elevated health or environmental risk. The cost for compliance with the requirements in House File 168 must be paid by the permit applicant. With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn it over to public testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And the first testifier is Sherry Smith. Ms. Smith, if you could identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much, Representative Hansen and Lee and other committee members. Good afternoon. My name is Sherry Smith. I'm a resident of the White Bear Lake area. And very unfortunately, what has come to define the last 2 years of my life is the fact that I live a quarter mile from the Water Gremlin plant. All right. I'm here today asking for your support of House File 168, which would amend Minnesota statutes and require the cumulative pollution be considered before issuing future air quality permits or air permits. The cumulative impact of any type of pollution, whether air, water, or soil, must be taken into consideration when issuing operating air permits for companies. If this is not done, years of toxic pollutants, whether they're hazardous air pollutants or volatile organic chemicals, can accumulate in the water and soil. And we saw this with Water Gremlin, all right? Citizens cannot be exposed to these pollutants without fear of serious health impacts. I've seen it. I've lived with the fear. I've watched my friends and neighbors fall ill. And I am asking that we not allow this to repeat. It's a fact that communities such as White Bear have been overburdened by pollution, air, water, and soil, by this very bad corporate neighbor, far in excess of what their operational permit allowed for more than 17 years. I know more about transchloroethylene and transdichloroethylene, lead, hazardous waste, you name it. I don't want to ever have to think about these things, and I certainly don't want any other community to have to think about these things. I remain stunned at the lack of oversight and enforcement action that occurred in this scenario, and whether those missed opportunities were due to lack of resources or something much more concerning. We in the White Bear area were made into victims because of what happened in our backyard, all right? My neighbors and me watched this very serious situation unfold for the last 2 years. One conclusion we can draw from this experience is we must put stronger controls in place to ensure that our citizens are protected, all right? Health and safety of the citizens has to be our top priority, and I will say it again because that is my most important message today. The health and safety of citizens must be the top priority. We have to put stronger controls in place to ensure that there is no repeat of Water Gremlin history in another community. With the report published by the Office of Legislative Auditor just 3 days ago with respect to Water Gremlin and MPCA's handling of that situation, there is no question that more oversight must be built into our existing systems and protocols, all right? Whether at the legislative level or from a regulatory compliance standpoint, we've got to ensure that state agencies and the legislature has the authority, the resources, legislation with teeth to keep our communities safe. In the case of Water Gremlin, this serial violator of their air permit, our community, whose health has already been compromised by decades of pollution and violation after violation, we are relying on government to ensure that there's no repeat of history and no further exposure to the community, all right? We cannot leave room for ambiguity. We have to have stringent and super specific regulations to ensure that there's no repeat of what happened. So again, any Cumulative effect of current or past environmental pollution from all sources has to be considered and analyzed carefully when issuing a permit to any facility. The impact on human health and the environment has to be factored in. And for a community like White Bear, whose citizens have been impacted daily and who watch the current and more to come remediation efforts to clean up what occurred, this legislation will make a huge and positive difference, all right? I know there are other communities in the state that would also benefit. And I thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak this concern, which is very real to me and the thousands of residents in the White Bear Lake, White Bear Township, Gem Lake area, whose lives have been impacted by these toxic pollutants. Please give your support to this bill. And thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. And members will take questions at the end of the testimony. Ms. Leslie Gutierrez-Carriel.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leslie Gutierrez-Carriel. I'm the environmental justice organizer at COPAL, Minnesota, a Latinx-led organization. I'm here to testify in favor of House File 168. Minnesota has the third highest number of municipal solid waste incinerators in the United States, with 7 incinerators. 6 of these incinerators are located in already overburdened frontline communities. The Hennepin Energy Resource Center, otherwise known as the HERC, is the largest solid waste incinerator in the state, burning 1,200 tons of waste per day, and is located beside North Minneapolis, one of Minneapolis' largest Black and immigrant communities, segregated by years of discriminatory policies. Low-income communities and communities of color have been used as wastelands, quite literally, for decades, of which many are fleeing this exact violence in their home countries. People all across Latin America are being displaced from their home, and because of water and land contamination caused by polluting facilities and Canadian and American mining companies. In our base at COPAL, we have a number of community members that have this very story. Going from living and farming alongside a stream of increasingly toxic waters and steadily deteriorating soil caused by dumps upstream, to needing to migrate out of their homes to survive, and are now being targeted by the very state that they seek refuge in. This bill not only affects environmental justice, but also public health. The pandemic has shined a light on health disparities in low-income communities and communities of color. With concentrated pollution in these areas, it affects people's immune system and ability to fight off diseases. So vulnerable communities in Minnesota are only vulnerable because we have historically allowed them to be targeted. Now is the time to change the awful narrative of concentrated pollution in frontline communities and put people over pollution for once. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the opportunity to testify in your community.
Thank you. Tony Quillis.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tony Quillis, and I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank you for allowing me to make a couple of comments on House File 168. Mr. Chairman, as House File 168 was introduced, it dealt with removing 5 criteria for cumulative impacts that were in statute and applied a cumulative impact to the metropolitan area, the 7-county metropolitan area. According to the Pollution Control Agency fiscal note, that would have impacted 823 air emission permits in the metropolitan area and then 100 construction and modification permits. So 923 permits, Mr. Chairman, would have been affected by House File 168 as introduced. Now with the A2 amendment, Mr. Chairman, it's not just the metropolitan area. It's anywhere that is been deemed an environmental justice area. And as Representative Lee pointed out, there are 4 criteria on page 2 of the amendment, starting on page 2.18 to 2.24. And I went to the Pollution Control Agency website, Mr. Chairman, and their environmental justice overview of areas of concern and took out 1 of those criteria. And it's not exactly the same, The bill on page 2.20 talks about 35% of households that have an income at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. The Pollution Control Agency website says 40% of people at 85% of the federal poverty level. So it's not apples for apples, but I think it gets us close. And some of the areas that would be affected now that meet this environmental justice definition would be Bemidji, Brainerd, Grand Rapids, Owatonna, Mankato, St. Cloud, Northfield, Red Wing, Moorhead. So anybody that would ask for a new, a renewal, or a modification of a permit would now have to meet the new criteria, Mr. Chairman, laid out on page 3. So we went from 923, and I'm just going to guess there's over 1,000 facilities right now that would be affected by the amendment A2. In that amendment, Mr. Chairman, on page 3 lays out the information that now must be provided by these over 1,000 air permits that would be affected. And it lays out 15 criteria that they must include in their permit application. Some of this is already in, you know, they do, but not all of it to this level of detail. This is pretty prescriptive, and I'm not sure that every business or county or state, because counties and states also possess air permits, that they would be able to meet the prescription and level of detail that is laid out here on page 3, Mr. Chairman, between 3.6 and 3.27. So, and if we got to the point where there would be mitigation negotiations between the regulatory party and the agency, how we would mitigate some of those 15 criteria, I think is open for debate, and I think would be tough to mitigate, Mr. Chairman. And then finally, just wanted to point out, when we talk about air permits, Mr. Chairman, permitted facilities of air emission sources by type in Minnesota, permitted facilities are worth 22% of the pie graph. 21% is off-road vehicles, 33% is non-permitted sources, and 24% is cars and trucks. So I just wanted to point that out, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I know there's other people to testify, and I'll stick around for questions at the end, Mr. Chairman.
Stephanie Fitzgerald.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of House File 168. My name is Stephanie Fitzgerald, and I'm testifying on behalf of Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment. All Minnesotans have the right to clean air, clean water, and a healthy environment. The MPCA recognizes that low-income Minnesotans and people of color are exposed to more pollution than middle and upper-income white Minnesotans. In Minnesota, the color of your skin and your economic status are factors that determine your risk for chronic asthma and your exposure to toxins. House File 168 would begin to address this inequity by defining environmental justice areas in Minnesota. This is a step in the right direction for understanding environmental justice disparities in Minnesota. And requiring the MPCA to publicly collect and maintain a map of environmental justice boundaries would inform future strategies to reduce pollution in these areas. House File 168 is important for Minnesotans because it addresses cumulative impacts of pollution on sensitive populations. The health effects of pollution are not simple. An application for a permit that modestly increases the amount of pollution in an overburdened area cannot tell the full story of the potential impact without studying the characteristics of the neighborhood and the other nearby pollution sources. Environmental health studies show that place-based stressors like neighborhood poverty increase individual susceptibility to the toxic effects of environmental pollutants. So in effect, one increased unit of pollution can be more toxic for some neighborhoods than others. In order to understand the impacts of increased pollution, the decision maker must examine the exposed population's heightened sensitivity to exposure and the ability to withstand, respond to, or recover from additional pollution. Adding a cumulative impacts analysis to permit review will aid decision makers in seeing the fuller picture of permit impacts. And furthermore, the law will create a fuller picture for ensuring that the residents of environmental justice areas have the opportunity to participate in the decision-making process. We encourage the committee to move this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Delaney Russell.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Delaney Russell. I'm a volunteer with the Sierra Club. The North Star chapter represents 80,000 Minnesotans empowered to protect our community's well-being through environmental advocacy. We believe everyone in our state deserves to be safe and healthy. However, our regulatory processes are falling far short of promoting this goal. The Sierra Club supports this bill because it offers tangible and community-supported ways to address the extreme and pervasive racial disparities in our state. I'd like to briefly address 4 points. First, to reduce systemic racial disparities, we need to follow the priorities of those most impacted by systemic racism. This bill, like many others around the country and in DC, has been drafted by leaders from the most impacted communities and reflects their priorities and experience. We are grateful to Representative Lee and Kapal's leadership in this area. Second, this bill provides achievable ways for EJ communities to have greater influence on pollution permitting decisions that affect them and their families. It provides steps to give EJ communities a genuine say and puts a greater burden of proof on industry when pollution permits are being considered in overburdened neighborhoods. Third, this bill offers us a tangible and achievable path for reducing racial health disparities. So many health disparities are because we have historically and structurally allowed more pollution in Black, Indigenous, or other neighborhoods of color. This bill makes it more difficult to pollute in communities that are already harmed by high levels of pollution. And finally, this bill is consistent with a positive business climate that protects people and their environment while creating good jobs. It simply fosters a more equitable distribution of both the benefits and the burdens of doing business. Thank you, Chair Hansen and committee members. We look forward to continuing to work with you and supporting our partners to achieve a cleaner, healthier, and more just future. Thank you.
Thank you. Greta Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Greta Gauthier. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 168 as amended. Mr. Chair, we support the intent and goals of this bill, and we are committed to working with the author moving forward. We know that while Minnesota's air quality is good at a very overall level, it is not the same in all parts of the state and does not affect all Minnesotans equally. In fact, our data show that Black, Indigenous, people of color, and low-income residents are more likely to live near sources of air pollution from facilities as well as from transportation and neighborhood sources. These communities are also more likely to be impacted by air pollution. For example, statewide, about 51% of Minnesotans experience air pollution risks above a health risk guideline. But for communities of color and Indigenous communities, Mr. Chair, a whopping 93% experience air pollution risks above a health risk guideline. These risks, along with other socioeconomic factors, contribute to make health disparities. And that's why MPCA has redoubled its efforts to focus on areas of Minnesota with long time and disproportionately high levels of air pollution or air environmental justice areas of concern. The governor's budget, which I know the committee will be looking at in the near future, includes policy language requiring cumulative impacts analysis and at least one public meeting for new or expanded permits for facilities located in environmental justice areas. And it also gives the commissioner some new authorities around permitting for those environmental justice areas. Again, Mr. Chair, we support the intent and goals of House File 168 as amended, and we want to and intend to work with the author to move these ideas forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Sasha Lewis Norell.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. My name is Sasha. I'm a college student in St. Paul, and I want to express my support for House File 168. Across our state, communities of color, indigenous communities, and low-income communities suffer disproportionately from the impacts of pollution, climate change, and other forms of environmental contamination, with little say in the regulatory process. This history of environmental racism and discrimination has deeply harmed communities, all for convenience and corporate greed. If we are to truly address this issue, we must begin by returning power to communities and actively engaging those who have been most harmed. It should not be up to communities to show that a project is harmful, but rather up to companies to prove that they are not sacrificing communities for their own gain. House File 168 is an important and essential step in incorporating environmental justice into our permitting practices and protecting frontline communities. We must equitably distribute the harmful impacts of environmental pollution and ensure that no community is overburdened by this contamination. We can create a system that supports frontline communities rather than sacrificing them. We just need to return power to those communities and actively engage them in these issues. This bill is about protecting everyday Minnesotans from corporate pollution and ensuring they are able to live in safe and healthy environments. It's time for us to stand up for our overburdened citizens and ensure that no one is bearing disproportionate impacts of corporate pollution. We must act now and begin to rectify this history of environmental racism and discrimination by passing House File 168. Thank you.
Thank you. Adri Arkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Audrey Arklin. I'm a junior at St. Paul Central High School and a second year representative on the Minnesota Youth Council. As many speakers today have laid out and highlighted the importance of reducing stress on overburdened communities, which is clearly laid out in this bill, I would like to highlight the support that this bill has from young Minnesotans across the state. As many of you are aware, the Minnesota Youth Council Bill of 2013 established the Youth Council as the connection between the Minnesota legislature and the young people of Minnesota. Our goal is to make sure that the voices of young Minnesotans from across the state and their priorities are represented inside this legislative body. This year, when creating policy initiatives through surveys and interviews with young people from the cities, greater Minnesota, and everything in between, one of the most important issues and priorities was a focus on the disproportionate impacts of climate change across our state. With that knowledge, the NYC created the Environmental Justice Subcommittee, focused on this very issue. As a member of that committee, we worked to identify the most important policies in the legislature surrounding environmental justice, and we landed on House File 168. House File 168, by working to protect overburdened community, strongly impacts young people across the state. Projects in these communities have already created havoc for students, from increased asthma in children from air pollution, decreased water quality, to other environmental stressors, such as noise issues, forcing students into unhealthy sleep and work patterns. For these reasons, this bill carries with it the support of young people across Minnesota, from students in Grand Rapids, Rochester, to North Minneapolis and St. Paul. We understand the desperate need for action in order to protect our overburdened communities, such as the one that I used to see every day from Central High School, which under this bill would be established as an environmental justice community. I urge this bill and the legislature to stand with the young people of Minnesota, fight for justice for overburdened communities, and support House File 168. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Eliza Nebaker.
Thank you, Chairman and Commissioners. Hi, I'm Eliza Nebaker, and I'm representing the climate advocacy group Minnesota 350. We support House File 168 because we know that Black, Indigenous, people of color, and lower income communities face disproportionate levels of pollution and are most impacted by climate change. We also know that's not a coincidence. Minnesota has a history of environmental racism and regulatory mishandling. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has a responsibility to protect Minnesotans by regulating industry. If the PCA is required to make decisions based on the human and environmental costs of new projects, it will be better able to minimize the harm to overburdened communities. The goal of a more equitable pollution control agency and more decision-making power for environmental justice communities shouldn't have to come at the cost of good jobs. House File 168 is an opportunity to begin righting historic wrongs, and we must take it. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we have some written testimony that has been posted for this and the second bill that's coming as well. So I'd encourage members to look at that. Any questions? We have Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have several questions. I'll try to narrow it down a little bit, Mr. Chair. To the bill author or to any of the testifiers today who might be able to help, my first question would center around how the process might look if this bill became law. What would a proposer be doing different than they're currently doing now? Obviously, having a statewide impact and an additional significant regulatory process is going to have an impact on costs as well. And I'm seeing that we do have a fiscal note, and that's helpful. But, this last week, Mr. Chair, we heard quite a lot from MPCA after we watched and looked through the OLA report as it relates to water gremlin and some of the other difficulties that we're having trying to get through the current regulatory process. So, that's kind of why I'm wondering what, in addition to what we already have, what extra steps are we looking at if this bill became law? So if the bill author, Representative Lee, or any other testifier could answer that question, it'd be really helpful.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, on the piece of the process, I will, let the commissioner from the MPCA and folks on MPCA to answer that. And, regarding some of the other issues, I think that, really boils down to who are we trying to protect? And, what this bill does is that it's trying to protect, the public health. And if, we have a facility that wants to come in that, falls into this category, then, if we want them to be a good neighbor and for them to engage with community members to really look into the community that they're going to be operating or they're proposing to be operating in, or if they are amendment something that they are currently operating in. And, we have seen two examples, Water Gremlin and Northern Meadows in my district, where these facilities are not good neighbors. They have admitted that they, forge and mess with some of the reporting records that they have put forth. And so as lawmakers, as members of the legislature, we really need to take a look at this. And if we have, facilities, like I said, wanting to come in, great. Why don't they do the work to work with the community members to figure out if that's, what the community wants.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Representative Heintzman, thank you for that question. Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman, I think, we would need, the MPCA would need to spend a little more time with this new language as amended to determine, kind of exactly how it would work and what would be the things that the agency would be responsible for and what would be the things that the permittee or the permit applicant would be responsible for. So I'm happy to follow up in writing, but at this point I don't know that I can lay that process out step by step for you.
Ms. Gauthier, I think Mr. Eliff with House Research has raised his hand and might be able to provide some drafting guidance. Representative Heintzman, if that would be okay, is that you're looking for some more info?
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'd like to go with Mr. Eliff, if that Representative Heintzman.
Yes, that would be very good. Thank you. We really obviously need to understand what the process would look like, and it apparently isn't something that the bill author fully understands, and then even the MPCA would have to spend a considerable time to explain this bill to us. So hopefully Mr. Eliff can pull that off.
Mr. Eliff.
I'll do what I can, Mr. Chair. I'm starting on page one of the amendment, paragraph G on page 114. The first thing that this bill requires that isn't currently done is that in the permit application itself, the person seeking the permit must indicate whether or not the action that is sought is going to impact an environmental justice area. Paragraph H right below says the agency gets to review that determination by the applicant, and it's up to the agency to determine the actual geographical boundaries of an environmental justice area based on the definition that's in the bill. It also says on paragraph I at the bottom of page one that determination of the geographic boundaries can be appealed by a petition from people living in an environmental justice, or what they consider to be an environmental justice area, can appeal that to the commission and include in their appeal information stating why they feel they meet that definition. What then happens is that the applicant, and now I'm on the very bottom of page two, undertakes the demographic analysis that Representative Lee laid out. This is all the information that attests to the sensitivity of the population to additional pollution that may result from the granting of the permit. I want to back up and say that the actual analysis of the cumulative levels of past pollution is done by the PCA, but this data on demographic analysis relating to sensitivity is done by the applicant. And then on page four of the bill, beginning on line 4.7, it tells the agency to take all that information, the cumulative pollution analysis that the agency has done, the demographic analysis that the applicant has done, and any additional information that's relevant, if there was testimony or written comments received at a public hearing. And then it's up for the commissioner to determine whether the incremental environmental impacts that would result from granting that permit in an environmental justice area, in conjunction with the cumulative impacts that the PCA has analyzed and the heightened sensitivity of the population that the applicant has analyzed, would lead to increased levels of environmental health or health impacts compared with denying the permit. So that's kind of the procedural steps that this bill would require a permit applicant to take if they're going to impact an environmental justice area.
Mr. Hansen, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Eloff. There's still obviously a lot of processing information here before we fully understand what this impact would be. But if I could, Mr. Chair, if Commissioner Gauthier could answer another question. I'm wondering, you said in your testimony, Commissioner, that you support the intent of the bill. And I think that just about all of us could say that today. Human health is absolutely paramount in the work that is done at MPCA. And it's something that is absolutely critical and paramount to us as legislators trying to figure out where safe limits might be, what's the science relative to these kinds of questions. But when you say we support the intent, I would press you a little bit and ask, you know, what parts of the bill do you think we could work on? Because it does sound as though there is a huge regulatory change that could be coming. And, you know, even as it relates to the area impacted, it doesn't sound like that's completely known and that could change if I'm reading the amendment correctly. So could you spell that out or at least attempt to?
So Ms. Gauthier, and that'll be the final question, Representative Heinzman, from you. I've got three others that I want to go through. So Ms. Gauthier, and then Representative Lewick, Representative Wozlawick, and then Representative Igo. Ms. Gauthier, and the bill is being laid over for possible inclusion. Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Thank you for the question, Representative Heinzman. When we say of course we agree with the underlying intent because we understand that there are Minnesotans that have been subjected to disproportionately high levels of pollution for a long time. And it's our mission to address that, as you stated. I think that we want to work with the author. I know that Representative Hansen introduced the governor's budget recommendations for the environmental agencies, and that bill contains some of the ideas that we had, which are very similar. We also support a cumulative impacts. You know, we have provisions in it that talk about public meetings or face-to-face meetings between community members and permittees, because we have heard that when we have worked with communities that are environmental justice areas of concern. And so, you know, we have very similar goals, and we want to just have time to look at our existing process compared to what's in this bill and what the ideas we had under the governor's language, and then figure out a path forward.
Representative Lueck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question before MPCA. Do we have a concept of how many EAWs, or particularly EISs, this would impact, for example, on an annual basis? It sounds like you literally have to do every one of them over again. Is that a reasonable assessment of what this change would cause?
Ms. Gauthier, do you have to do them over again, or does it happen when the permit comes up?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lueck, thank you for the question. I'm assuming you're pointing to the language that starts on page 4, line 31, regarding the demographic analysis for environmental assessment worksheet and environmental impact statements. I do not have the anticipated numbers that we may get for those in environmental justice areas on an annual basis at my fingertips, but we can certainly look backwards and see what we have had in the past and get that information. I'm assuming that this language would relate to our work moving forward after the new law would take effect. So I'm assuming that as we were issuing permits for expansions or so forth in the environmental justice areas, that we would do this, that this demographic analysis would become part of our environmental review work. And as you know, environmental review includes the environmental assessment worksheet and the environmental impact statement. I'm not sure the degree to which the Environmental Quality Board may be involved in this, because they have a role in environmental review as well. But I think my understanding is from reading this that we would be looking forward to work we would be doing on permits in the future.
Mr. Eliff, did you have a clarification? I saw your hand up earlier.
Mr. Chair, just to say that Assistant Commissioner Gauthier is right. If you look at the effective date on page 5, the language referring to EAWs and EISs only applies to those documents that are determined to be complete after the effective date of the bill. So we don't have to do them over again in response to Representative Lewis's question.
Representative Woslawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Lee for bringing this bill forward. As a legislator who also has had a really bad corporate neighbor in my community, I'm grateful to see this happening. I do just want to point out a couple things. I was glad to hear that one of our testifiers pointed out that there's a significant amount of poverty across the state, and there are communities in other parts of the state besides the metro that would be impacted by this legislation. And I think that's an important piece to point out, that this is not just a metro-only issue. This is an issue in other parts of the state as well. And also just, you know, wanted to point out that we're talking a lot about communities, but one thing that we haven't addressed, it's not the jurisdiction of this committee, but is workers. So we have workers who are working in these facilities who are exposed to high levels of chemicals, who come from these communities that have high levels of pollutants in their communities. And so they're sort of getting a double whammy by living in these communities, but then coming to a workplace where they're exposed to these chemicals. A lot of the employees at Water Gremlin, for example, are immigrants and are coming from some of these same communities that are impacted by this air pollutant, and then coming to a workplace where some of their kids were poisoned by lead. So just wanna throw that out there. Didn't have a question, just I think there's more work to be done on this issue, looking at other things like how this impacts folks who work in these facilities as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for the Assistant Commissioner, and in really just what would this bill do to prevent another water gremlin? I guess that's my question, very frankly.
Commissioner Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Igo, for the question. So the water gremlin situation was, excuse me, a permit violation that happened over a period of time. So as my understanding, I don't think the bill before you right now is really dealing as much with enforcement, which is what we do after a violation, as it is to permitting. I think that had a law like this been in place when we initially permitted Water Gremlin, we may have written the permit differently. I don't know. But that's really the situation that the the legislative auditor was looking at was an enforcement issue, whereas this bill is about permitting mainly. So I don't know if the two are comparable. I would probably want to turn to one of my colleagues who's also in the Zoom room if you would like a more detailed answer.
I don't see a hand, but I do see a new member's hand. So I want to make sure I'm going to each member before I circle back. So Representative Backer.
Oh, thank you. And Commissioner, with all, to me, when I read the bill, it just seems like it's going almost, there's so much vague language in there. That's my concern. So out in Western Minnesota, as you're familiar, we do have permitting for various ag projects and stuff like that. And we've had some of those challenges. We've been able to work with your staff, and we appreciate that. But with the vagueness in this the language, I'm concerned about it really, if someone's interpreted one way, we're not going to see permitting for people who are good, like the river views and so forth. That's the concern that I'm hearing from, is it's so vague, it's going to be basically stop. If you get someone in the wrong position, it's going to stop these type of businesses and expansions and stuff. How would you comment on that, please, Commissioner? Thank you.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Representative Backer, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that my comment on that would be that, you know, the MPCA is charged with protecting public health and the environment, and that is one of the reasons why we are focusing on environmental justice areas, because of their disproportionately high pollution levels in the past and currently. I would say that I would need to look at the map we currently have online of environmental justice areas and to determine whether there are any that impact agricultural producers. But if there are, I think there are few, but there may be some. So I think we would do our best to work with the producers, as we always do, to figure out how to make their operation work and profitable at the same time that they are meeting the requirements to protect public health and the environment. That's always our goal in working with producers and permittees.
A follow-up question, Chair?
Please. Quickly, Representative Backer.
What would you say would be area in Minnesota that you think this language would help the most? What area, geographic area, do you foresee?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Backer, thank you for the question. I think that, you know, the geographic area is going to depend on what the criteria are, and Representative Lee's bill has a list of criteria in it. His list is slightly different from the criteria that we have been using to identify these areas on our website. I'd be happy to send that link to the committee so that you can take a look at it. But generally, for our purposes, we have looked at areas where there's a significant, like at least 45, 50% of the people are living below 185% of the poverty level. To give you an idea, that's probably around, you know, a family of four making less than $50,000 a year. So it's that plus areas where there are a significant portion of the population identified in the census, the way we've defined it, as people of color or members of tribal nations located in Minnesota. So those are usually the criteria in environmental justice policy that are used to define these areas, and the actual physical space on the ground is going to depend on the percents and then that you decide to use. And there are several bills moving now with different, slightly different definitions. And since we put our map up on the web, the EPA has come up with a definition. So in the governor's language, we want to adopt what the EPA is doing, just to put that out there. But we would like to work going forward on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Green, and I'd like to wrap this bill up to lay it on the table, or lay it over, excuse me, but at 2 o'clock. That's a little more time, but I think it's important to have that discussion. So Representative Green, and then back to Representative Heintzman, Representative Lewin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Commissioner Gauthier. I was looking for other questions coming forward, and one thing that came into my mind on the cumulative effects is that is it possible, or in this scenario, you could have someone who has been a very good actor and that does omit some but is well within the current guidelines to be basically punished because now other people out there maybe aren't or maybe are, but just because they now are added into this cumulative effects could be denied a permit. Is that something that you could foresee?
Commissioner Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Green, thank you for the question. It's always hard to envision hypothetical situations from language, especially language that you didn't write yourself. But and I appreciate that the language is making the same goals towards the same goals that we have. I'm not sure about the answer to that question, but I do know that there are areas of the state where people have and are exposed to air that has more pollution than other parts of the state, and that this can exacerbate and cause health inequities and health impacts. And so we're concerned about those areas, and we want to try to address that. There are many ways to ease the effects of emissions. So there's equipment, there's filtration, there's things that can happen within the facility. So I would hesitate to paint an absolute answer at this point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the follow-up and just a quick comment and a question. This bill covers a huge subject area. And I appreciate the extra time, Mr. Chair. I know that we don't want to rush something like this without at least attempting to fully understand what's going on here. And maybe Mr. Enoff could help with this final question. In lines 1.19 and 1.20, this is just one example of a huge question mark for me, and I'm sure for a lot of other folks. I'm reading that the agency must determine the geographical boundaries of an environmental justice area. And if someone could explain to me if that is happening before or after the permit is issued, that would be really helpful. And because I don't know that it's clear if that's something that's potentially happening as an ongoing process, and how would the agency determine how that area is established is just a real question mark in my mind. And then, like I said, if that's something that, is a moving target, what's determining where those lines are, and is that before or after the permit is issued?
And let's get Representative Lewick's question on the table here too, and then we'll provide, have the agency and the author provide written response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the agency. I note that the fiscal note that at least I've got here is dated the 3rd of February, talks about 117 plus FTEs and a significant amount of money in this coming biennium and then the out years. Does this fiscal note represent the entire bill amended as we see it today, or is this a two-week-old fiscal note that probably has little or no relevance to what we're looking at today?
The fiscal note is prior to the amendment being adopted today, so it will have to be adjusted, Representative Lurick.
Yeah, so it is correct, and it bears no resemblance to the language that's before us today, so it definitely needs to be updated.
Representative Lee, any closing comments?
I just want to say thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members for this discussion. And, you know, as always, you know, with regards to the work that we're doing over here at the legislature, I'm open to having conversation with my colleagues on the committee and in the legislature, and my doors is always open. But, you know, I have had this bill or some version of this bill over the last 2 years, haven't heard any, feedback from my colleagues and from, some of the interest group out there that are in opposition to this bill. And so hopefully as we lay this bill over, that colleagues and, you know, folks who are interested in this are reaching out to have this discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I do want to note for those testifiers, you all did a great job. And those of you who may have never testified before, thank you for participating in democracy and hope that you will be back. Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 168 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Bill is laid over. House File 503, Representative Lee, non-expiring air emission permit public hearing requirements. Representative Lee, would you like to move that House File 503 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill?
Mr. Chair, that is my motion.
Representative Lee, I believe you have an author's amendment.
Yeah, so the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair and members. So when I was getting the bill drafted, we got the bill drafted. It wasn't the version that I want. And so the A1 amendment actually just add on some of the amendments that were added onto House File 3057 in the last biennium. And so the amendment for the A1 will target only the non-expiring state individual air quality permit. And so this is not for the other types of non-expiring permit out there, focusing just on the state individual air quality permit.
Representative Lee moves that the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those, oh, is there any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Lee, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 503, as amended, is a bill to allow the public to comment and inquire about large emitters of air pollutants that have non-expiring state individual air quality permits issued by the MPCA. The bill requires the MPCA to hold separate public informational meeting every 5 years on facilities with non-expiring state individual air quality permit to allow the public to make comments or inquiries regarding any aspect of the permit, included but not limited to permit condition, testing results, the facility's operations, and permit compliance. It also requires the cost of these activities to be paid with air quality permit fees, and if the commissioner determined that a request for the agency to review an existing state individual permit is not warranted, the commissioner of the MPCA must put in writing the reasons for denying a permit review under their duties. The public information meeting must be held at a location near the permitted facility and convenient to the public and staff employed at the facility response for ensuring compliance of the permit and agency official must be present. Mr. Chair, this bill provides an avenue for the public to have a voice when there's facilities in their communities that are not acting in the best interest of their families and their health.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And you have some testifiers?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So I see Ms. Smith, but I think she has left the meeting. Is Ms. Smith here? Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, again, for the record, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And just probably some more questions, Mr. Chairman, than concerns. And in the bill itself, Mr. Chairman, on line starting on 1.19 to 1.10, it talks about regular intervals of what's now a public information meeting. But then also at the end, we're talking about every 5 years. So just to clarify, Mr. Chairman, is it
what those regular intervals are. I'm assuming they're every 5 years, but I'm not sure if they would be more frequently than every 5 years. So just wanted to see, you know, if we could get some clarification around that. Also, Mr. Chairman, when we talk about the informational meeting and any aspect of the permit, we discussed permit conditions, as Representative Lee pointed out, permit conditions, testing results, and facility operations. Now, not all facility operations are included in a permit. Hours of operation for the facility, for example, would be one of them. So if we could get some further definition possibly around facility operations and what that exactly entails, would probably be helpful. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, on the scope of the bill, the original fiscal note, when we talked about all of the air emission permits, the fiscal note from the Pollution Control Agency roughly talked about 1,759 public information meetings that would have to happen. With the A1 amendment, I'm going to guess, Mr. Chairman, that's going to limit it down to 115 facilities. So, Mr. Chairman, the question for me is, these facilities are located throughout the state of Minnesota. They're from, you know, War Road to Worthington to Winona to Wilmer. And so is there a way to think about maybe possibly limiting the scope of it through geographic areas, or possibly is there a type of emission that we're looking for? Because most of these 113, I'm not going to put a number on it, Mr. Chairman, but most of these individual air permits are non-controversial. And so we're going to have Pollution Control Agency staff traveling to, you know, pick the parts of the state where some of these facilities are located, and they might be the only people in the room. There might not be any members of the public. And so just trying to figure out if there's a way possibly to discuss the scope of what we're looking at in House File 503. And Mr. Chairman, I'll stick around for questions. And again, thank you for the ability to make a couple of comments on House File 503.
Representative Lee, do you want to take those now?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And, you know, just responding to some of that, you know, these public hearings are, you know, the intent of the legislation is for every 5 years. And, you know, definitely we can work with the MPCA and the interested group to define some of these definition with regards to operations and whatnot. And I would like to ask, you know, Ms. Gauthier, if you're able to just comment on the type of facilities that are, you know, that we're targeting with this on the state individual, the air permits, state air permit.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Lee. I'm not sure about what all of those types of facilities in the smaller list that Mr. Quillis referred to. Are you asking me what types of industries are those? I'm sorry. If you could repeat the question, that would be helpful. Thank you, Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I wanted to see if you could just give us a sense of what those entities that has the state individual permit looks like, whether they are, you know, I have some notes here that the facility is expected to generate pollutant level in excess of lead 0.05 tons per year, sulfur dioxide 50 tons per year, PM10 25.0 tons per year, volatile organic compounds 100 tons per year. And so if you could put that into a perspective for the members so that we know the type of facilities that we are looking at with regards to these individual permits.
Commissioner Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Lee, thank you for that clarification. Mr. Chairman, if it's okay, I would like to call on Doug Wetstein, who is in the Zoom room. He is the division director for the agency's industrial division that handles our industrial permitting. And I think he can speak to this with more specificity.
Mr. Wetstein, introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the facilities that would be typically covered by an individual permit, whether it's Title V, Part 70, or state issued, are going to be your larger facilities. Could range from, you know, everything from from power plants, taconite mines, refineries, foundries, ethanol plants, sugar beet processing plants, large printing facilities, larger facilities. There are some thresholds that they get tripped that would make them, you know, not able to qualify for the other types of permits that are available. I believe that answers the question.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will let the members of the committees, you know, see that Representative Heisman have a question, and so entertain those questions.
I do want to provide Commissioner Gauthier with the opportunity. She was on the testifying list, but I wanted to go to her to answer the prior question to see if we could be efficient. So, Commissioner Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I will go ahead and present my testimony then.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. This bill, House File 503 as amended, is about addressing the disproportionate levels of pollution that have been the day-to-day reality in areas of Minnesota where people of color, indigenous people, and low-income people live. And as I testified earlier, our data bear out that this is the case. And that's why the MPCA has been working on this more. As we've been working with community groups in these areas, we are hearing that those groups want to meet face-to-face with the people that own or operate permitted facilities in their neighborhood. The governor's budget does include new policy language that allows the commissioner to make public meetings a permit condition for all permits issued in environmental justice areas. And other new policy language requires that permittees who are new or expanding a facility in an environmental justice area must hold at least one public meeting. So we have tried to address this in the governor's language. Also, one of the MPCA's cross-agency strategic goals is to increase the involvement of communities in decisions and the actions that impact them. We know that we have more to do on that front. So we do agree with the intent and goals of this bill as well. We also have some ideas about scope and that sort of thing. But I will say that as introduced, the bill would have applied to 1,759 non-expiring air permits. And as scoped by the amendment, the bill now applies to actually 113 individual non-expiring air permits. So Mr. Quillis was very close. Statewide. And we agree that a targeted approach is a good way to do this work. So we want to continue to work with the author and supporting the intent of this bill moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any further comments at the time.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like we have a ballpark idea how many facilities may be affected, and maybe Commissioner Gauthier could answer this question, and then I have another one. But is it possible to get a list of those facilities that would be affected? Could that be provided offline?
Commissioner Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Heintzman, yes.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, mostly a comment and a little question, I guess, but a lot of this information that we're talking about, it appears, is already available on MPCA's website. I did a little looking, and it sounds like, as I'm clicking around, that this is a lot of public information that's available. There could be maybe some other options to help citizens access that information. Maybe it could be provided to folks in these areas that are potentially affected and publicized as available. I'm sure there's community groups and others that maybe are not aware that this information's available. Maybe the bill author could have some ideas on that. I'm not sure that this is the most efficient way to do that. There is obviously a significant cost, but I do agree that information should be readily available. And I think the the intent that the bill author is functioning under is good. I think that it's important that people have up-to-date, accurate information. So, you know, just that being said, I guess hoping that we can find a way to potentially access that information more efficiently than what we're looking at today in the amendment and in the underlying bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Eliff could provide technical help there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to share my experience with Representative Heintzman and the rest of the members of the committee. What's available on the agency's website is the actual permit itself, which was written by engineers, and I can say can only be read by engineers. I think this bill is an attempt to translate that technical information into information that us lay people can understand more readily.
Representative Becker-Finn, then Representative Jordan, and Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just really wanted to thank Representative Lee for bringing this forward. Part of my community was also impacted by what is continuing to go on with Water Gremlin. And the reality is that the system has existed for a long time without a lot of eyes on what is happening and how these different companies operate and maybe pollute their communities. You know, often we don't even realize that the pollution is happening or even being permitted until after the fact when something goes wrong. And so I really applaud Representative Lee for continuing to push this bill and the previous bill. I think this is the conversation we need to be having about the public really being aware of what kind of things are going on in our communities. And I think once every 5 years is not that much to ask to allow folks to have some say into what is happening in their communities and to be able to ask questions. I think if any of us lived right next door to one of these facilities, we would certainly want that opportunity. And I think that's what we're trying to do here. And I don't think once every 5 years is as much to ask as it's being made out to be. So thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this forward.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very interesting conversation. I'm really glad that we are having both of these bills together. So thank you for that, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee, for your work on this. I don't know if maybe Commissioner Gauthier, could you talk to me a little bit about which air permits, just as a little bit of context, I represent Northeast Minneapolis, which is a very similar industrial corridor to Representative Lee. We share either side of the river. Can you tell me a little bit, and Northern Meadows is certainly something that my constituents think a lot about. I think a lot about as someone who has asthma. Can you tell me what kind of permits Northern Meadows had and when those expired and how the MPCA used the expiration dates of those permits to make determinations about that facility?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Jordan. Thank you for your question. I do not have that information at my fingertips, but I will see if Mr. Wetstein is able to help us, although he was not in that position at the time.
Mr. Wetstein.
Doug, you're on mute.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as Commissioner Gauthier mentioned, I've only been in this position for about a year now with kind of direct day-to-day contact on air permitting. So I do not know what type of permits they held prior to their relocation, but we could certainly provide that to the committee.
We can look that up, Mr. Wetstein and Ms. Gauthier, and get that back to the committee. That'd be helpful.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I think that's one of the reasons why it would be great this bill is so needed, is my constituents are constantly asking what about, and then picking a random facility on the Mississippi River and saying, what about that one? What about that one? What about that one? And there's not always an opportunity for them to both hear information from the facility itself, which I would think that the facility would welcome the opportunity to talk about what a good neighbor they are to community members in my district or Representative Lee's district or anyone else's district. So I really think I mean, I have many of the people who have these facilities along the river are constantly trying to meet with me to tell me about what a good citizen, what a good neighbor they are. So I don't know why they wouldn't want to tell all of them, the rest of my neighbors, the same thing. So I would think I would really welcome that. I also wonder a little bit about it. Can you talk to me a little bit about some of the accessibility features of your website? For example, what languages is what in what lay people information is there? What languages, what kind of accessibility measures are there for people with disabilities to access this information on the MPCA's website?
Ms. Goff here, can you get us that information?
I can get you that information, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wislawick and then Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to make a point here. Water Gremlin had a non-expiring permit. So I've heard a lot from folks in my community about this issue and wanting to have more community involvement in the discussion process around this issue. So I want to thank Representative Lee for bringing this bill forward. And not just because it impacts my community, but it impacts a lot of communities around the state. And myself and really no one in my community even knew that non-expiring permits existed before Water Gremlin happened. So I think it's a really big public awareness issue as well that, you know, there are these facilities that just keep getting their permits. They just keep going and going unless they have something that they need to change on them. And that we've seen issues with lots of issues with regulation and ways that MPCA does things, and I think this is a way to really do a better job of engaging with the community and making sure that they have a voice in the process and that they can ask questions and find out more about, you know, what chemicals are companies using and how are they managing it and what sort of work are they doing to protect employees. I think that's a really big piece of the conversation that we've been able to have with Water Gremlin, though they've been a reluctant to really engage with the community. It has been something that we've been able to do, I think, because of a disaster happening. And I don't think it should take a disaster happening for us to have those conversations. So appreciate Representative Lee bringing this legislation forward.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Mr. Anoff for chiming in earlier as we were discussing some of the language here in the bill and the complexity of the information that's available on the website. I am wondering though, after hearing his explanation or his comments, if you could point to any language in the bill that requires those persons on line 1.13 that are supposed to be available from the facility, who I'm assuming are engineers, is there any language in the bill that requires that they provide that information in a way that everybody could understand? In other words, laypersons.
Mr. Wetzel or Mr. Eliff?
Does indicate that, although that's certainly what you would want them to provide. That's a good point. We may need translators not only for language, but for engineering.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I made my point.
That's why we lay things over. Any final comments, Representative Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members for this discussion. And, you know, as Representative Wislawick have pointed out, you know, we know at least two of the facilities that have, you know, over the last few years that been have shown to be bad actors in our community, that being Water Gremlin and Northern Meadows and my district, both having non-expiring state individual permit. And if we, you know, to one of the questions that one of our members have brought forth, if we were to get, you know, this bill passed, where we have prevented that situation, we don't know. We can't really go back in time to see if we could have prevented that information. But if this was in place, at least our community members would know, you know, some of the issues that were brought forth in the report, you know, regarding the testing results from the equipment and, you know, the permit compliance. And so I think that this is definitely needed so that we can have these conversations so that the public can see what is operating in and around their neighborhoods, so that we could really, you know, move forward protecting public health over, you know, corporations and their pollution. So, Mr. Chair, I really appreciate the opportunity to present House File 503 today, and I renew my motion that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 503 be, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Members, wanted to make sure we provided the opportunity for testimony and questions today on these important bills. Representative Lee has been working on them, as he mentioned, for a couple of years. and the conversation will continue with those. I think we're making progress on both of them, and appreciate that the agency is moving as well. I think it's an important issue for today and tomorrow and the days after that to be working on. Members, we only have a few committee meetings prior to starting to hit the deadlines. When we're meeting twice a week for an hour and a half, there's not a lot of time for hearing. So on Thursday, we're hearing four bills. Members should plan on hearing bills, probably three or four bills, maybe more per day. We have asked for Friday hearings, but that has not been granted as of yet. We have been told that we will not be able to meet into the evening. So there's a very limited limited opportunities ahead. So we are going to be posting these bills ahead of time. We'll be getting both verbal and written testimony. If people can provide written testimony, that makes the questions easier. We will also be doing somewhat what we did today, that if we aren't able to answer all the questions and the bills are being laid over, we would ask for a written response that we can publicize while the bills are continuing to be worked on. But we will have to move some bills out, particularly those that have to go to other committees. And we are going to have some bills coming here that are coming from other committees and have to go to other committees. It's not a great situation. It's COVID related, but the rest of the state's having businesses and people are having to adapt. And we're going to have to adapt in order to get our work done. And we will get our work done. It's probably going to be a bit bumpy to try to get things through here in the next few weeks. So with that, Mr. Strohmeyer, if you could maybe just walk through what we've got on Thursday and Tuesday.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Thursday, we're going to be hearing the Lessard-Sams bill or the funding for outdoor heritage. Represent Becker Finn's outdoor recreation grant bill. Representative Eklund has an ATV funding bill. And then Representative Kosnick has a Billsby Dam infrastructure funding bill, which is only reason it's before environment is because it deals with the DNR, but is primarily in the jurisdiction of the Energy Committee because it deals with the RDA. So that's why it's here, is because it deals with the DNR. And so that'll be moved to climate. Next Tuesday, we're still finalizing the agenda, but I think we're looking at having a bill with cities and pesticides, I believe, from Representative Vang. Representative Fisher has a bill related to lead. And then after that, we're still kind of trying to figure out the pieces of the corresponding agency bills that have to move forward, but we'll start seeing those as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And we are getting agency policy bills that are part of the governor's initiative, and those are being introduced. If you are still working on your bills, I would encourage you to get them jacketed as soon as possible, because the clock is ticking for our work. So with that, we are adjourned.